Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Vision of the Anointed Self-Congratulation as a Basis for Social Policy is a polemical work of political and social criticism by economist Thomas Sowell. Written in the context of late 20th century American debates, it argues that many prominent policy ideas in areas like education, crime, and welfare are driven less by careful testing of evidence than by a recurring mindset among influential elites. Sowell calls these elites the anointed, meaning people in politics, academia, and the media who treat their preferred policies as proof of superior moral insight. The book's purpose is to explain why certain reforms persist even when results are disappointing, and why critics are often dismissed as morally suspect rather than engaged on the facts. Sowell links policy failure to a pattern of rhetorical claims, selective standards of proof, and the use of government power to impose solutions. The book is primarily diagnostic, aiming to clarify how arguments are framed and how evidence is handled in public policy debates. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the anointed mindset and moral credentialing. A central topic is Sowell's concept of the anointed, a class of decision makers and opinion shapers who assume their policy preferences signal both intelligence and virtue. In this framing, disagreements are not treated as competing interpretations of complex social trade-offs. Instead, opponents are often viewed as insensitive, ignorant, or motivated by bad intentions. Sowell argues that this moral elevation changes how policy debates function. It allows advocates to claim authority without meeting the same evidentiary burden they would demand from rivals. Because the starting point is that the anointed are on the right side of history and compassion, the result is a political culture in which signaling humane intentions can outweigh measuring outcomes. He also suggests this mindset is reinforced by institutions that reward sophisticated rhetoric and credentialed certainty, particularly in elite media and academic environments. Whether one accepts his ideological conclusions or not, the book uses this concept to organize a critique of how legitimacy and status are earned in policy discussions, and why policies can be insulated from accountability when moral prestige substitutes for practical results. Secondly, evidence, standards of proof, and optional reality. Sowell repeatedly returns to how evidence is treated when social programs are proposed, defended, or criticized. He contends that the anointed often rely on broad assertions about social justice or human betterment, while demanding stringent proof from skeptics who warn about unintended consequences. In his account, an eacher and a count, this creates an asymmetry. Ambitious reforms proceed based on intentions and selective anecdotes, but negative outcomes are explained away as exceptions, implementation flaws, or the product of lingering prejudice. The book emphasizes the importance of confronting theories with observable results, not merely coherent narratives. This concern is connected to his broader interest in how incentives and trade-offs shape real-world behavior, even when policymakers would prefer to focus on moral goals. He argues that when facts conflict with preferred theories, advocates may shift definitions, change metrics, or redirect attention to different harms, keeping the moral posture intact by focusing on patterns of argument rather than on any single policy dispute. Sowell aims to show how public discourse can drift away from falsifiable claims toward what he portrays as a kind of optional reality. Thirdly, rhetorical patterns, vocabulary, categories, and framing. Another major topic is the language of policy debate. Sowell argues that the anointed employ a distinctive vocabulary that frames issues in ways that predetermine acceptable conclusions. Words and categories are not neutral in his view. They can encode assumptions about who is compassionate, who is backward, and which outcomes count as progress. He highlights how debates may focus on intentions, symbols, and moral narratives, rather than comparative performance between policy alternatives. This framing can make trade-offs harder to discuss because any emphasis on costs or side effects is treated as callousness. Related to this is his critique of how certain crises are rhetorically constructed to justify sweeping interventions, and how dissent can be stigmatized through labeling rather than rebuttal. The point is not merely that language can be biased, but that it can systematically narrow the range of thinkable options by making some questions feel illegitimate. In this analysis, rhetoric becomes a tool for maintaining authority. If the anointed define the terms of debate, they can appear to win arguments before evidence is considered. The book treats this as a recurring mechanism across multiple policy arenas. Fourthly, symbolic beneficiaries and the mascot function. Sowell argues that some social groups are used symbolically in policy disputes, serving as moral emblems rather than as the true focus of careful cost-benefit analysis. In this view, advocates may highlight a beneficiary group to demonstrate compassion, while paying less attention to whether the proposed policy measurably improves that group's long-run outcomes. The group functions like a mascot that helps others make a moral statement. This framework ties back to the book's title, Self-Congratulation Becomes a Driver of Policy, because the main reward is being seen as enlightened and humane. Saul suggests that when policies fail, the symbolic value can still protect them from reassessment, since withdrawing support would risk losing moral status. This topic also illuminates why policy disagreements become emotionally charged if a program is tied to a public display of virtue. Criticism feels like an attack on decency itself. While readers may dispute particular applications, the analytic point is that incentives in public discourse can favor gestures and narratives over measured effectiveness. The book pushes readers to separate the moral satisfaction of advocacy from the empirical question of whether the people invoked in arguments are actually helped. Lastly, constraints, trade-offs, and skepticism of social engineering. Underlying Sowell's critique is a broader philosophical issue: whether society is something that can be redesigned by enlightened planners or something shaped by complex interactions, constraints, and imperfect knowledge. In The Vision of the Anointed, he sides with skepticism toward large-scale social engineering, emphasizing limits on what policymakers can know and control. He argues that many reforms proceed as if good intentions and expert confidence are sufficient to overcome trade-offs, but real-world responses to incentives often undermine planned outcomes. This stance connects the book to a tradition of constrained or tragic thinking about politics, in which no solution is cost-free and institutions must cope with human fallibility. The Anointed Vision, by contrast, is portrayed as less constrained problems exist because others are insufficiently wise or virtuous, and therefore, empowering the right experts can fix them. Saul is especially critical of the tendency to treat government intervention as the default remedy and to discount decentralized decision-making through markets, communities, and civil society. Even readers who disagree with his policy preferences can take the broader lesson, evaluate reforms by comparing realistic alternatives, acknowledge constraints, and expect unintended consequences when complex social systems are pushed in simplistic directions. In conclusion, The Vision of the Anointed is best suited to readers who want a framework for analyzing how public arguments are constructed, especially in debates about education, crime, welfare, and other contested social policies. Conservatives and classical liberals often read it as an explanation for why certain progressive reforms persist despite disappointing outcomes. But the book's broader value is methodological. It pushes readers to ask what evidence would actually change a proponent's mind, and whether moral signaling is substituting for measurable accountability. Its most practical benefit is sharpening critical thinking about standards of proof, rhetorical framing, and the incentives that shape elite discourse. The book also offers an intellectual benefit by connecting everyday policy disputes to a recurring pattern of assumptions about knowledge, virtue, and authority. Compared with more technical policy analysis, Saul spends less time proposing detailed alternatives and more time diagnosing the debate culture that enables confident interventions. That focus helps it stand out among social criticism books because it targets the machinery of persuasion rather than only the policies themselves. Readers who prefer balanced treatment of ideological opponents may find his portrayal too sweeping. But even then, the book can serve as a provocative lens for re-examining how status, language, and moral certainty influence modern policymaking. If you would like to support Thomas Sowell, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.